You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates.
This is East Carolina Hall of Famer and Utah Jazz first-round draft pick Blue Edwards. You're listening to Pirate Basketball Overtime on The Sports Objective, your home for the best East Carolina hoops coverage.
What's going on, Pirate Nation? Welcome in to the Pirate Basketball Overtime on the Sports Objective. East Carolina victorious tonight, 74-66 over UNC Wilmington. Pirates have won four straight against the Seahawks at Williams Arena Menchie's Coliseum, trailed by 12 with just over a minute remaining in the first half. But tightening the screws defensively after halftime, after trailing by seven at the break. Led by as many as 10 or 11, and then, you know, went on to that 74-66 win. Bobby Pettiford, a career-high 24 points, also a double-double from Brandon Johnson, and a terrific performance as well from Caleb LeCount. But right now, you know, before we dive into more of what transpired tonight in Menchie's, I'd like to welcome in Matt and Kyle. Matt, how are you this evening?
Doing good, guys. Really, really solid win tonight. Really strong second half. It was. I think when you look at the second half specifically, Bubba and Kyle, I think that's the type of team Mike Schwartz wanted at the outset of the season. The defensive intensity was much. It was ratcheted up to where, you know, I think it really needed to be. I mean, you could just see a major difference in the effort. And just overall the quality of defense and really good performance. You know, after a frustrating first half, I thought the second half was very strong.
Yeah, you've been wanting to kind of see that all year out of the defense. We've been a little bit disappointing, except for the big moment where Pettiford hit the half court shot a week ago or so. But besides that, we've been a little bit disappointing this year, and so nice win tonight over Wilmington, in-state rival who's been playing good. They'd only lost one game so far this year, and nice to see the defensive effort in the second half after being down big early. That was one we really needed to win. We, we've had a couple of bad losses, and then the loss to Mason, not a bad loss. No shame in losing George Mason on the road. It was just how we lost that was ugly. So nice to see us play that way in the second half, come back, play good defense, which you hope is the beginning of what you'll see the rest of the year, and the win tonight over Wilmington. And now, what are we now? 5-3?
Yep. 5-3. And, you know, if you'd have told us coming into this game, you know, with Ezra Assar, we would have certainly been fired up about a win like this, but playing this game without Ezra, who's still, you know, battling an ankle injury. And then you had RJ Felton, and then also Brandon Johnson getting first half foul trouble. So you had to have Bobby Pettiford and then also Caleb LeCount step up, and they did. They combined to score 35 of your 74 points. And then once Brandon was able to get back on the court, he knocked down, I want to say, four threes in the game. We'll go over the numbers later. And then the defensive effort, I'd say, just – on the surface, it was the best of the season.
Yeah.
You know, we came in allowing 74 points per game, which ranked 235th nationally. Opponents were shooting pretty well against us from three. Our three-point field goal defense was ranking 249th nationally. And then our field goal percentage defense, 328 of 351. Tonight.
Thank God.
Yeah. So, and opponents coming into tonight were shooting 48.2%, I think it was. Tonight, we hold Wilmington below 40%, 39-3, I think, to be exact. And then the Seahawks just 3 out of 23 from beyond the arc, 13%. And
that is abysmal. That is some abysmal shooting.
I said, well, not even 13%, I don't think. Well, it's whatever. It was atrocious. But coming into the game, they ranked second nationally, shooting 43.4% from three. So that right there,
I think you had some early numbers. I think you had early numbers that were a bit out of whack that don't indicate probably how good our 3-point defense will be, and their 3-point shooting probably isn't as nearly as good as it looked early. So you probably had some things kind of even out tonight to probably how they'll actually be factual for the rest of the year. Probably not to that extreme for as bad as they shot threes, but you understand still what I'm saying.
So with Ezra being out, you had Callan Richard get the start. The things that he did didn't jump off the stat sheet, but at the same time, I think, Matt, it was you made some comments there early on the way he was battling on the boards.
Yeah, I think, he did a nice job, at least boxing out. Early in the game, we were really struggling in terms of blocking out on the defensive end. We were getting crushed on the boards. I mean, Wilmington was just getting a ton of offensive rebounds. I thought he did a pretty nice job at least boxing out, getting his body on the man. It was good to see the young guys get some action out there between Richard and Malanga. He's a guy that really, I think, watching him tonight, for a big guy, he can move well, and he's got a pretty good motor. I was impressed with some of the things I saw at him tonight.
Yeah, Cal Richard and Sierra Malanga, they both have a lot of upside compared to some of the bigs we've had in the past. So very encouraged with what I've seen in a small sample size thus far. Cal Richard tonight, as I mentioned, got the start, played 14 minutes. He did foul out, but he pulled down 5 rebounds. And then you had Sierra Malanga play 11 minutes off the bench. 2 for 2, also pulled down 3 boards, so 4 points, 3 rebounds, and 11 minutes for Sear.
Yeah, a lot of guys got playing time tonight, and I think the big thing with Ezra out, we were in so much foul trouble early in the game, Kyle. I mean, Felton had 2, Brandon Johnson had 2. You needed somebody to step up tonight, and this performance from Pettiford was very impressive, because not only was he getting to the rim, he was getting into the paint, he was getting to the rim, but he was knocking down his threes. And I think if he can do that, he's not going to play that good every night, but man, if he can knock down his threes, it's going to just really help this team. I think that's the Pettiford when he was recruited out of high school. That's the type of guy everybody thought they were going to get.
Yeah, no doubt. You saw it in the game where he hit the half court shot, and now you saw it tonight for a sustained effort, putting up 24 points, and when we needed him, big time, really, with some guys going out with foul trouble, and a game where we were playing from behind, and he wasn't, what did he average at Kansas? Kansas is Kansas, and it ain't like he put up like, didn't he average 8 points a game there or something? It ain't like he was horrible.
No,
he was horrible.
You're thinking about Cam. You're thinking about what Cam Hayes did at NC State as well as LSU.
Okay.
But Pettiford really wasn't asked to score like that at Kansas, kind of like Jaden Walker at Iowa State when he was on that Sweet 16 Cyclones team.
Right.
More of a different role. He did have a moment or two at Kansas last year down in the Battle of Atlantis, over the Thanksgiving holiday. He hit a game-winning shot against Wisconsin, but by and large, he didn't score a ton for the Jayhawks. I'd say probably averaged 2 or 3 points if I just right offhand.
Okay, but obviously had the potential, he wouldn't have been at Kansas, and now in East Carolina, he's starting to show what he can do.
Right, and to your point, a lot of folks, kind of, I guess, playing devil's advocate, the question mark, would Pettiford be able to score the way you need him to score. And not that you're going to get 18 or 24 from him, but you know, if you'd have told me, and when I say 18 or 24 on a consistent basis, but yeah, Bobby Pettiford's brought a lot more to the table offensively than I thought he may. And it's what knocked down, at least in his last two games at Minji's, knocked down a combined 7 threes.
Yeah, no, that's huge. He definitely plays well at home, and contributing very well so far to the program.
Yeah, unlike like, me. Well, you know, when you have a point guard that can get into the paint and make things happen, it's going to really help this team, because Brandon Johnson, obviously, you know, he is a true stretch five for this team. That he just he loves to be out on the perimeter. He's very effective there. He's really improved his 3-point shooting, and his ability to step away from the basket and pull his defender. You know, you're pulling the other team's big out to the perimeter now. So that opens up some lanes. And when you have a point guard that can get into the paint and make things happen, it's going to really help out. And, you know, that's just, you know, I was very impressed with him tonight. I mean, he just had it all going, you know, and when he attacks the rim, you can, he's got a different gear athletically than I think a lot of the point guards we've seen here.
Yeah. His explosiveness and, you know, ability to finish in the, at the rim. And Norm Fear chimes in on YouTube saying he probably could have had 30 tonight, but there were multiple times, you know, where he attacked the basket and made nice passes as well, or you know, passed up some chances to attack the basket and they found other guys who knocked down shots.
Yeah, and you know, the first half of the game, I think when we were really struggling offensively in the first half, you know, we had a lot of guys in foul trouble, but if you go back and look at it, everything was on the perimeter. Every shot we were taking was a three at one point. And there was really nothing, you know, in the paint. We weren't getting to the rim. And I think – I'm not sure what happened at halftime. I'm guessing it was, you know, that team got lit up pretty good by Mike Schwartz because they responded in the second half.
They did. And, you know, appreciate everyone chiming in tonight on Facebook and YouTube. In addition to Norm, we have Chuck Saeed chiming in saying outscored the Seahawks by 15 in the second half, 45-30. And as I mentioned in the first couple minutes of the show, East Carolina trailed UNC Wilmington 36-24 with just over a minute left in the first half, but then closed the half on a 5-0 run to get within 7 at the break, and then really took control of the game in the second half. And as Matt mentioned, you know, whether it was Bobby Pettiford Jr. or Brandon Johnson, I know RJ didn't have one of his bigger nights, but he did have a big basket or two. And when the Seahawks would, when the Pirates built that, you know, 2 or 3 possession lead and would get it lead out to 7 or 8, and then the Seahawks would trim it back down to 2 or 3, you know, it seemed like ECU always had an answer on knocking down. I remember Pettiford having 2 big threes, one off the left wing, yeah, and one from the top of the key.
Yeah, that was a good point, Bubba, because you would see Wilmington look like they were going to start to cut back into the lead. And every time the Pirates would hit a basket to maintain that advantage of a couple, 3 possessions. And so that was big that we never let them get it back to a 1-possession game at any point there late in the second half.
And someone else who really had a big game, that is, of course, Caleb LeCount. Caleb finished with 11 on the majority of those, or I think a decent number of those came in the first half. But what about him, Matt, and the way he took the ball to the basket? One, I can think, kind of driving the ball off the right wing and tremendous job finishing among the trees.
Yeah, he was able to knock down some shots tonight, and that additional scoring really helped. You know, I think when I look at this team, I think one of the big decisions Mike Schwartz is going to have to make is what to do with that second guard position or the backup point guard. You know, and I think, you know, on certain nights like tonight, LeCount was able to contribute But when we're playing a team with bigger guards, it's going to be tough for him just because of his size. So I think, you know, we got to get more out of Walker. And I want to see Walker more in that backup point guard role, or even playing side by side with Pettiford. And because he brings some additional size, but he hasn't been able to get really into any rhythm yet this year. And I don't know what it is, you know, with Walker. I don't know if it's because he was playing a lot more point last year with the ball in his hands, and now he's playing off ball more. But I think he's a guy. I mean, what do you guys think about that? I think we need to find a way to get him going.
Yeah, I agree. He certainly played well in that role the second half of last season once Javon Small was injured. So, and Jaden's had a game or two this year where he really came up big. I'm trying to remember if it was Kennesaw State or perhaps Georgia Southern. But we came into the night averaging or having four players averaging in double figures. And then you also had Jaden Walker averaging 8, and I believe Bobby Pettiford Jr. averaging 8. So really very balanced scoring thus far. And you know you're going to get a lot from those big three with Johnson, Assar, and then also drawing a blank here at this late hour. But Johnson, Assar,
Malanga, and Richard.
And then, of course,
Walker and Biala.
RJ Felton, because I was talking about RJ, how could I forget that? He came in the game averaging between 21 and 22 points, and then tonight just had 7, but did have a couple of big buckets.
So, I got a question for you, Bubba. I don't know if you know this or not. Is the tip-off time that I just – that Alexa – because I was trying to remember who we played before South Carolina, so I just asked my Alexa, and we're playing Maryland Eastern Shore. Is the tip-off time of 4 p.m. for next Monday correct? That can't be right.
I'm pretty – yeah, that's – they brought it up on the broadcast tonight, and, yeah, that is odd.
Why are we playing a 4 p.m. basketball game on a Monday afternoon?
Yeah, especially on December 4th. If it was a couple weeks later, you know, during the holiday break, and you might get it a little bit more, perhaps. But I don't know, because I remember attending a game. I want to say it was like on a Tuesday or something kind of weird against Southern Miss 2 years ago in Joe Dooley's final season.
Yeah, late December. Yeah, I remember that.
But me and my dad and Gabe Mikulas. And it was, I think it was a noon tip off, because it was right there before the players went home. So it was probably like, you know, December 21st or something.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, right. I don't know that it makes sense, but you can make sense of it. But why in the world are we playing a 4 p.m. tip off on a Monday night in early December, or on a Monday afternoon in early December? I don't understand the logic behind that at all. You do want fans to attend the games, right?
Yeah, that's a good question. Obviously, you would understand it if it was a
tournament.
Well, if it was a 11 or something, because, you know, Education Day,
right?
The women had their annual Education Day yesterday, defeating Hampton 75-55. But I was looking at the schedule to see if there was anything listed as to. But yes, that is accurate. 4 o'clock tip off against Maryland Eastern Shore.
Is it anything to do with the volleyball tournament?
No, I mean,
I would think there's something going on that day.
Maybe the volleyball tournament, if we made it to the second round, was that night or something.
No, I know that. I know we could not commit to hosting beyond what we are hosting for volleyball because of men's and women's basketball. So
do the ladies play like UConn that night? I know we don't play UConn anymore.
I'll look and see
The women's schedule. That's just so odd to me. If anybody has the answer to that, please comment.
The women do play at 6:30. They also play Maryland Eastern Shore.
You would think
those would be reversed.
Exactly.
You would think it would be women at 4 and men at 6:30, or even women at 5:30 or 6, and men at 8.
Yeah, somebody's got to explain this to me. That sounds like some politically correct bull crap to me there, having the men play before the women.
For what it's worth, the women's game is the salute to service game. And then Justin Butts, as I just mentioned, says that he didn't know the rationale, but the women do play Maryland Eastern Shore as well at 6:30 following the men. And then Norm Fear says exams start Tuesday. So,
yeah, but just reverse it. Just reverse it. Have the girls play first and then the guys. I just don't understand that. But anyway, neither here nor
now
there.
Now, Kyle.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. I'm joking, brother. I'm going to question the administration. You're right. I gotta. It makes perfect sense to play it at 4 o'clock. We don't need any questions answered. 4 o'clock tip off. Let's move all our games to 4 o'clock tip offs.
Oh, that's great.
We've mentioned some of the individual scoring. Very quickly, I'll run over the box score tonight, taking a look at the scoring. Again, Bobby Pettiford Jr. in 34 minutes, 8 out of 13 from the floor, 3 out of 5 from 3, 5 of 6 from the line, 24 points, 4 rebounds, and 2 assists, 4 zip. You had Brandon Johnson with a double-double, 18 points and 11 rebounds in 30 minutes, 5 of 11 from the floor, 4 of 8 from 3, 4 of 6 from the line. Then you also had Caleb LeCount coming off the bench, playing 23 minutes, a large number of those minutes in the first half, but also had some big buckets after the break, 5 of 10 from the floor, 1 of 4 from 3. 11 points, 2 assists, and 2 rebounds for the talented sophomore out of L.A. Also getting in on the scoring, you had Quentin DeBunge with 7 points in 35 minutes. R.J. Felton with 7 in 24 minutes. Sierra Malonga with 4. Benjamin Baiela with 2. Jaden Walker knocked down 1 free throw and only had 2 shot attempts in 13 minutes. And that is it for East Carolina. UNC Wilmington was led by Pitt County's own Shaquem Phillips. You had Phillips with 20 points, 7 out of 16 from the floor, 6 of 7 from the line in 31 minutes. A nice point guard matchup between Pettiford Jr. and Phillips.
Really impressive performance by Phillips, I thought. He was on fire in the first half. He cooled off a little bit in the second half. I thought we did a much better job on him, but really impressive performance. He's a very solid player. So I was impressed with him. But I kind of feel like, don't you guys feel like DeBunge is kind of the X factor for this team? I mean, I really liked how he was really aggressive tonight. He was trying to, to beat his man off the dribble and get to the rim. I think he's kind of the X factor. I think when he figures it out, I mean, he's still relatively young, but I think when he figures it out, he could fall into that slasher type role, a guy who can kind of, make things happen off the dribble. And then, if his threes fall, that's a bonus. But, I liked how aggressive he was tonight, even though the shot wasn't always falling.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you miss every shot you don't take. So eventually they'll start falling for him. So nice to see, you don't want him to be scared to take a shot.
Taking a look at the team numbers, we talked about how really both of these teams had struggled defending coming into this game. East Carolina's opponents were shooting a little over 48% from the floor. UNC Wilmington's 46.5%. And Pirates certainly in the better defensive performance tonight. UNC Wilmington shot 39.3%, 22 out of 56, just 3 out of 23, 13% from 3. The Seahawks got to the charity stripe 30 times, but were only able to convert 19 of those, 63.3%. East Carolina, 44.2 from the floor, 23 out of 52, 8 out of 25 from beyond the arc, with all 8 of those makes coming from Brandon Johnson and Bobby Pettiford Jr., each knocking down 4 trifectas. ECU, 20 out of 32 from the charity stripe, too many misses there, shooting just 62.5%. Fortunately, that did not come back to bite us. And then after not doing the best of jobs in the first half on the glass, not sure what those numbers were at halftime. And I know you referenced that, Matt, in our group text. But then the Pirates finished the game a 10-rebound advantage, 43 to 33, including 14 on the offensive glass.
Yeah, that's huge. I can't stand to watch us get out-rebounded. I mean, sometimes it's just a talent disparity, and that's why you get out-rebounded. But when it's effort, that pisses me off so bad. So really happy to see that tonight. That wins you a lot of basketball games.
And in addition to the defensive effort, as we mentioned early in the show, I just think the biggest takeaway for me with this game, besides improved defense, is just how without Ezra Asar, with Brandon Johnson getting in foul trouble, R.J. Felton getting in foul trouble, and then you had Pettiford and then also LeCount step up the way they did, and having to go small and without your big three on the floor there in the first half, and found a way to hang in there despite falling behind by 12, closed the half with a little 5-0 spurt, and carried that momentum into the second half. And the way you defended the arc, and talked about the defensive performance, but if you'd have told Coach Schwartz coming into the game that you're going to hold UNC Wilmington that was shooting 43-4 from beyond the arc to just 13%, he would have been ecstatic.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, I thought we did a pretty good job making, like, taking away their perimeter offense and making them put the ball on the floor. And a lot of times they had to settle for mid-range shots, and nobody can make mid-range shots anymore. It's like it's a lost art in basketball. So I thought we did a pretty good job doing that tonight.
Before we wrap it up and get out of here, let's take a look at what lies ahead for the Pirates. We talked about how on Monday afternoon the Pirates will return to the floor at Minji's, taking on Maryland Eastern Shore at the odd tip-off time of 4:00 on a Monday. The Hawks are 2-4 this year. Bringing up their schedule, they have taken on other competition within the American. They opened the year against the Temple Owls, falling 85-65, and do have what would appear to be a pretty nice win. I'm not sure how Penn's faring this season, but Penn Quakers, pretty good basketball tradition, but they took down Penn 83-80 in the fourth game of the season. They also play Notre Dame and Liberty, two quality clubs, but Notre Dame beat them by 20, and then Liberty blew them out by 37, 99-62. So, I mean, no doubt about it. So, if East Carolina plays the way it should play, or can play, I should say, that we should win this game rather comfortably, but you never know. And, coming off an emotional win like we are over the
and South Carolina after that.
Yeah. Yeah. In there between the Seahawks and the Gamecocks, and also you factor in exams and reading day.
Trap game.
Yep. A bit of a trap game. So Pirates need to come out on Monday and take care of business, get to 6-3 and really carry the momentum into the game against the Gamecocks on Saturday, December 9th, a noon tip-off on ESPNU.
Yeah, that game will probably be pretty near sold out, wouldn't you think? I mean, I don't know that for a fact, but I would think the South Carolina game is going to be pretty near sell out.
I would think, and, you know, speaking of crowds, hats off to Pirate Nation. 5182, certainly the best crowd and atmosphere of the season. So, again, 5,182 in attendance tonight for the 74-66 win over UNC Wilmington. And the students really created a nice atmosphere.
Yeah, and that's good to see. And it's good to see the crowd get rewarded with a win. And hopefully it happens again next Saturday when we play the Gamecocks, because you're going to have your biggest crowd of the year. And, when you have those butts in seats, you need to take advantage of it and get a win. And good to see us do that tonight. Hopefully we do it again. Well, Monday before that, but there won't be that many people there, but when we play the Gamecocks.
Yeah, hey, man. I'm really hoping what we saw tonight is the start of something, you know, defensively, guys. And, you know, the thing is, coming into this game, we had, what, 5 days off?
Yeah.
So we had a chance to – we had a really good chance to prepare for this game and also get things fixed defensively, because, you know, it's been really up and down early in the season, which, you know, to a certain extent is expected. You know, it's early in the season. You're figuring things out. But, you know, we did have 5 days to prepare. I liked what I saw tonight. I thought we did. We were much improved on that end. I just really hope that this is the start of something, you know, that's going to last defensively, because – I think that's the way we're going to need to win, especially when we get into conference play. We're going to need to really, you know, lean on our defense. And especially when you're in a situation where you have one of your top scorers like Ezra out, you know, we're going to need to lean on the defense. So happy to see that.
No doubt.
And Matt, I think it was in the second half tonight, you had Farrar, 6'6", guard, you know, pretty thick, LOL, from from UNC Wilmington. Did you hear what the Minchie's Maniacs were chanting when he was shooting free throws?
I did not.
They're chanting "Eat a salad."
Well, that's not nice. As a fat guy, I gotta say I'm offended. I ate a salad tonight. Sometimes it just doesn't do it.
That's funny. Well, I got to say, like, you know, a lot of times when you're watching these games on ESPN3, ESPN Plus, Bubba.
Kyle was the one that corrected you on that.
Kyle, my bad.
Yeah, so, ESPN Plus, yeah. We can't
I'm not used to the old school.
We got to promote these ESPN platforms, you know, properly, because they don't get enough money.
Yeah. But I did think
they always make it a point to promote us properly.
Oh, yeah, of course. Both East Carolina and the Sports Objective.
The Eastern Carolina Panthers.
Yeah, exactly.
And Brad says it's a shame that Quentin DeBouche was unable to knock down one of those two free throws there with about 15, 20 seconds remaining. To, you know, the Minchie's Maniacs were chanting, "We want tacos," but unfortunately that did not happen. And then Norm Fear said Mike Schwartz in the post game referenced how the last three practices since the 22-point defeat at George Mason on Saturday were the most intense of the season.
Good.
And we certainly played like a team on a mission in the second half tonight.
Hey, Brad, it was like, you ever see the movie Semi Pro with Will Ferrell? Where he has to buy the crowd, everybody in the crowd, something. What is it? Corn dogs. Remember Semi Pro? You guys saw Semi Pro, right?
I've never seen it.
Oh my God, Kyle!
I'm not a huge Will Ferrell fan. I like Elf.
I've seen bits and pieces. I hadn't seen the whole thing. That's one of those. I gotta watch it.
So there's a scene in the movie where if they score a certain number of points, he has to buy the entire crowd corn dogs. So he basically throws the game, and he, you know, he doesn't score the last basket. And so that's what – DeBouche, man, come on. You got to make those free throws. Tacos for everybody.
Kyle mentions how the Gamecocks are coming to Williams Arena, Minchie's Coliseum, on December 9th. Gamecocks 6-0.
Oof.
Last year, rough go of it. Pirates beat them in Greenville. South Carolina. I was there in attendance with Gabe Mikulas that day. So far, taking a look at the Gamecocks, East Carolina, of course, suffered that disappointing loss when we were without Brandon Johnson to USC Upstate. The Gamecocks opened their season with a 29-point win over USC Upstate. Then they beat Virginia Tech 79-77, beat VMI by 10, beat DePaul by 5.
Oof.
Beat Grand Canyon, you know, who has a pretty good program, by 7. Yep. And then they beat Notre Dame 65-53, and they return to action tomorrow.
Are they ranked? They got to be getting pretty close to being ranked.
I'd say they may be receiving votes. I'll see if I can bring up the poll here momentarily before we wrap it up. But they return to action tomorrow with a 7:00 tip off against George Washington. And then perhaps this could bode well for the Pirates. They go to Clemson on December 6th, which is a Wednesday night game prior to coming to Greenville on Saturday. And that's an 8:00 tip off on the ACC network against the Tigers on 12/6.
Who do they play after us?
They don't play for a week. So
okay.
They play Charleston Southern on the 16th.
Yeah, but I do like that playing Clemson before us. And you said it's at Clemson?
And it's on the road, yeah.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
And then we'll go ahead and take a look on December 14th. As we were discussing, I guess it was perhaps off the air, and the Pirates will travel down to Lakeland, Florida, you know, roughly 2 hours from the Gators campus. And the Gators 4-3 thus far in the second year of that regime. Coach Golden, I believe it is, coming over from San Francisco. They opened the season with a 20-point win over Loyola Maryland. Lost a 73-70 game to Virginia at the event in Charlotte at Spectrum Center. They beat Florida A&M by 20-plus. They beat Florida State by 21, 89, 68. They beat Pitt by 15. You know, Pitt has played very well thus far. And they lost a shootout with number 13 Baylor, 95-91. And then most recently lost 82-71 at Wake Forest. So really challenging schedule. How about that? You've played Virginia, Florida State, Pitt, Baylor, Wake Forest. Unbelievably tough schedule thus far for the Gators, and have performed very well, scoring a ton of points. Just in those five games that I just referenced, they had 86 plus in 4 of them. So on the Pirates, that improved defense will need to continue to show significant improvement to give ECU a chance against Florida.
No doubt about it. Did this cut out here?
No, I was muted. I was talking to my wife. I thought you were going to take over after Bubba's comment, but you let me down, Matt.
I think we were both muted and probably talking to ourselves, I think. My bad.
Yeah, I was talking to my wife, actually, but that's why I was muted. But Florida coming up after South Carolina. The schedule gets very tough. This is real deal basketball, but it's what you need to get you ready for American Conference play. You're not ever going to be competitive in the American at the level we want to be to try to win the league, compete in the top half of the league by playing, Doudouville State every night. So it's good to play the Floridas and the South Carolinas of the world. It's a tough schedule, but, you know, if you win one of those two, good God, I mean, that would fire the fan base up big time as we get into the back half of the non-conference schedule.
Taking a look at the American scoreboard tonight, Florida Atlantic continues to roll since getting upset. I want to say is perhaps in like game three against Bryant when they fell 61-52. They've been lighting it up and blowing some folks out, and as well as winning a couple of close games against quality competition. in game two, they had beaten Eastern Michigan 100-57. And then game four, beat Butler 91-86. Game five, take down 12th-ranked Texas A&M. Buzz Williams, ball club that Steve Rockefort's on that staff. They defeated the Aggies 96-89. They beat Virginia Tech 84-50. And then tonight they beat a pretty good Liberty team 83-58.
Yeah, they're going to be a handful when we play them in January, and that's why we got to play the these George Masons and these South Carolinas and these Floridas to get us ready for conference play, because the American, while it took a pretty big step back in football, despite the name recognition, I believe the basketball league is deeper now, actually.
Yeah, it's certainly North Texas. They were in the NIT a season ago.
They won the NIT.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, won the NIT. And then, of course, Charlotte has good history, even though they won the CBI last year. CIT. Won the CIT. I know they lost a ton from that team and also had a coaching change, but Charlotte does have some basketball tradition. And then you have UTSA. They're leading Lamar 78-77 with 54 seconds remaining in that game. Hofstra beat South Florida 82-63. And Rice defeated UT Martin 98-78. Let's see, any other scores of interest? That's pretty much it. Guys, before we wrap it up and get out of here, I will say, in the next day or two, whenever East Carolina announces that it has its offensive coordinator to replace Donnie Kirkpatrick, we will go live and discuss that hire. We'd love for you to join us and talk about the future of the Pirate offense. We're hearing, we'll give credit here to Steven Igo and Hoist the Colors, also of 94.3 The Game. Chad Morris, former Clemson OC, Arkansas head coach, SMU head coach, now a Clemson offensive analyst. He's one of the front runners. And then you also had John David Blake, co-OC there in Oxford for Lane Kiffin and the Ole Miss Rebels, who averaged, about 35 points a game and went 10-2 this season.
Yeah, I think two guys from high octane offenses. Both I think are really good candidates. I'd be pretty happy with either one. I'm leaning towards Chad Morris, guys. I think just because when you look at the situation we're in and how important of a year this is for Mike Houston coming up, I think he really needs to go with the guy that has the most experience actually calling plays. And I just think he really needs to lean on somebody that has a lot of experience and a proven track record. And I think Morris is ultimately going to be the guy, but what do I know? I mean, this is pure speculation, but
Kyle, I heard Baker's interview went really well.
Okay. All right.
So
what do you think, Kyle? I mean, do you have a favorite here?
I would go Morris just based on experience. Baker's intriguing, but, he's co-OC at Ole Miss. There's a reason he's co-OC, and there's a reason he's willing to leave Ole Miss for East Carolina. That means he's really not calling the plays there. So that's concerning, but also he's good enough to be named co-OC at Ole Miss, which means Lane Kiffin must think a lot of him, and Lane Kiffin's a pretty good evaluator of offensive play calling and, offense in general. So I would trust his judgment. He probably will be a very good OC calling plays somewhere. And if he gets the job here, he'll probably do a good job. It's just a little bit more of a risk. Chad Morris is a proven commodity, even though, since Auburn, he has not been an FBS offensive coordinator since 2020, but certainly was successful at a high level at Tulsa and at Clemson, was successful as a head coach at SMU, did not work out at Arkansas, was fired along with the rest of Gus's staff at Auburn. Got into high school coaching, and now he's back being an analyst at the FBS level. But Chad Morris is a proven commodity. So I'm with you of the two. That's who I would go with. But I think Baker at from Ole Miss is an interesting choice. It's a little bit more of a gamble, but it could work out well. The other name you're hearing is the tight ends coach and assistant head coach out at Ohio State. Would not make that hire based on his resume. That's an even bigger gamble, but we'll see how it plays out. And, you know, early on, Doug Martin's name was being mentioned. Looks like maybe he's not a candidate anymore. But so we'll see. I would expect if we don't get an announcement, by Saturday, I would start to get worried that we're maybe not coming up with the money. The guys we're interviewing at that level, like Chad Morris and Baker, guys at that level, that maybe some financial issues. Because we were told that Houston was told to make a hire this week at OC and the portal. You know, that's opened up. Recruiting's about to open back up. So you need to have your OC in place so we can get a quarterback and some receivers and some linemen in here.
Yeah, I think Chad Morris brings that name brand. You know,
he does. It'll excite the fan base.
Yeah, I mean, it was a time, 10 years ago, Chad Morris was one of the hottest names in college coaching in terms of offensive, bright.
Well, there was – I think at one time with Dabo, there was a lot of people that thought when Dabo first started rolling Clemson that it was all Chad Morris was doing. We found out since then that wasn't the case. Prior to going to Clemson, he did a good job as OC at Tulsa and did a good job at SMU as head coach. Just was a horrible fit at Arkansas. I don't know why Arkansas made that hire, quite honestly, and I don't know why he went.
Man, Arkansas is becoming a place where coaches go to die. I mean, I don't know what's going on.
How about them hiring back Bobby Petrino today? I don't have a – look, a lot of people hate Bobby Petrino. He's done some things. I'm shocked at a school where he was in a scandal for having a relationship with a young secretary that was a former volleyball player. I'm shocked they hired him back. I mean, I guess so. If you remember what she looked like, there's a lot of people that goes, who can blame him?
Well, that's why I was laughing yesterday when I got the ESPN notification that the University of Arkansas was vetting Bobby Petrino. What was their? I don't know. I mean,
well, what they're doing? Do you still like attractive young blondes? And he said, no, I don't like them anymore. And they hired him. He turns out now.
Go ahead.
That was the process. They asked him. They got in the maroon, Bubba, and they showed him a picture of a bunch of attractive young blondes. And he said, no, I don't like those anymore. And they said, all right, we'll let you come back.
That was just laughable after what happened the first time, and that's why they let him go. Them saying they were vetting.
Yeah, well, they were just trying to say that.
Petrino's the ultimate example that, like, if you can coach offensive football, no matter what you do, like, you could.
Oh, that's bullshit. No, it's bullshit. If you're Art Briles and you get cleared of all allegations, you're still not even allowed to be on the sideline anywhere because I don't know why. I don't know. Art Briles seems like to be the biggest scapegoat in the history of college football these days.
Yeah, that's actually a good one. You know, he's definitely done. I mean, he was cleared.
He was cleared recently on any wrongdoing.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting. His son, his son-in-law is now the head coach at where the hell's his son-in-law the head coach at? He just got a job.
Mississippi State.
Yeah, his son-in-law is now the head coach of Mississippi State. With Art being cleared of any wrongdoing, it'd be interesting to see if he gets a job on his son-in-law's staff.
Jeff Levy.
I'm just going to call him his son-in-law.
Listen, America is supposed to be a place for second chances. So, I'm all for giving a guy a second chance. People live, people make mistakes, they move on. I mean, if he still wants to coach, give him a second chance.
Hey, like you said, though, about Bobby Petrino, Matt, you have what Arkansas is doing now. You had Louisville bringing him back, Louisville's fan base, the first time when he was there having all that success back in the early 2000s, I think it was 2003, when he flew down to Auburn, and you know the folks there were pissed off. And then he went to the Falcons. The way he left the Falcons, and just put a note in the guy's locker, and didn't you know have the stones to address him face to face. And then just the whole thing is just, it shows you, you know, like you're saying, if you coach and the value of winning, is so great that one will look the other way.
Well, for everybody but Art Briles, I want to know why. We look at homie at Auburn. Mr. Christian boy there that was didn't have enough damn sense to get a burner phone and was using his school phone to call escort services. Then Liberty, Jesus University hires him. And now he's back in the SEC at Ole Miss. But for some reason, Art Briles, who again has been cleared of any wrongdoing at Baylor, cannot get a job.
And Liberty fired Jeff Barber to bring in the AD from Baylor.
Wow. Yeah.
Back years ago.
Yeah. Well, there you go. But I don't know. I you know, maybe East Carolina should be the place. Maybe you know what? You could probably get him for a hot dog. Call it audible. Mike Houston, hire Art Briles, give him his first job back in college football.
But a little bit more about Keenan Bailey. You referenced the Ohio State's tight end coach. I believe it was Johnny Gardner who messaged me with that this afternoon. I had not seen it. It was right there when I was wrapping up work. But it's Keenan Bailey, now in his eighth season on the Ohio State staff, in his first season as tight ends coach. He was previously promoted to the position of senior advisor to the head coach in February of 2022. He had been a quality control coach on offense for the past three seasons, during which he worked with the wide receivers and quarterbacks.
Yeah.
He said that he worked closely with Kevin Wilson this past season, prior to Wilson getting the Tulsa job. But yeah, that's one that it
may I say a big hell no.
Things it may be an unbelievable hire, but on the surface,
I know, it's believable.
Yeah,
he might be a young up and comer, and I'm sure he is. You know, I'm sure he's got a bright future and everything. But in this situation,
go somewhere else.
Yeah, you gotta have. You know, here's the thing too. You know, obviously you guys know this, but I mean, coaching at Ohio State, you're getting the best talent in the world.
Exactly. You know, exactly.
Coaching here at East Carolina is a much different story. You have to be able to do more with less, and it's just not the right fit. Not at this time. Not at this time, anyway.
And that's one reason why I also like the Chad Morris ideas, because he was at Tulsa and he was at SMU back before they could pay players again.
Right. Exactly. Another good point. Yep.
Very and true. Justin Butts agrees. He said, I'm going to go with Morris. I know conversations I had with Justin off the air. You know, he also liked the possibility of Blake.
I'll tell you really quick. Excuse I know it's getting me, late here, but
Baker. I knew that. John David Baker.
The Mississippi State offensive coordinator was obviously let go with that coaching change, but 2 years ago, he was the OC at App.
Yes.
And he lit it up there. And
Kevin Barbe.
Yeah. You know, I've been really – I've said a million times, I think you guys have too, that style of offense I would love to see in Greenville. And, you know, I know it's probably a little late in the game now. I'm sure Mike kind of has his mind made up, but I think I would have tried to get him in for an interview.
I don't know if that would have excited the fan base with him. The offense at Mississippi State didn't exactly set the world on fire this year. I think Chad Morris would. I think Baker would to an extent. I think you got to sell some season tickets, and I think Morris does that.
Can't argue with that, buddy.
James chimes in saying, I'm assuming he's referring to Barbe. Correct me if I'm wrong, James.
I would assume so, but I don't think he fired the fan base.
He says Barbe was the OC for Central Michigan when they won 9 games.
Yeah, he's a good coach.
Jim McElwain.
He's a good coach, and it would probably be a good hire, but it's just I'm going to fire the fan base up.
Well, yeah, as far as that's concerned, I just want us to hire whoever's going to be the be the best coach. I'm not worried about firing me.
Oh, I am because we got to sell season tickets.
I understand, but
no, I'm with you in the long run. Whoever's going to do the best job, win the games, because in the long run, that's going to sell you more tickets than anything. But he hasn't even came up for an interview that I've heard, so he's not even a candidate. But certainly a good OC and the land on his feet somewhere. I don't know why it didn't work out at Mississippi State this year. Could have been going from running a air raid to I don't even know exactly. Is he running a pro style offense?
Yeah, their offensive struggles. It didn't shock me at all when Zach Arnett decided to go from the air raid, especially true air raid, where they very rarely ran the football, and when they did, pretty basic ways in which they ran the football to what they did this year. I'm sure it was a matter of perhaps not having the proper personnel to be able to maximize what they were doing this year. But I thought that Arnett may be in trouble when he decided to go away from what they were doing, at least in year one like that, before they really had a chance to recruit for it.
We had access to Mike Leach's entire staff on offense. It was right there in place. So, why go away from it?
Spurrier Jr., and now he's at Tulsa on Kevin Wilson's staff.
Guys, I just think whoever we hire, whoever it is at the end of the day, it has to be somebody that fits with Mike Houston. And I just keep going back to the question, Mike Houston has a certain style he loves. Is he able to break away from that style and let – if it is Chad Morris – I apologize for my dog snoring in the background.
In an interview, he said, Matt, that we are going to be way more aggressive going forward on offense than we ever have – than he's ever been in his whole career. He's changing his philosophy. He stated that in an interview. And according to, all the rumors, innuendos, the him being a control freak on offense just ain't true. It was all Donnie, and that's what Donnie wanted to run. So we'll see. If that's the case, then I would definitely go with Chad Morris, because you need somebody that is experienced enough to have full reins of the offense. And Baker maybe also. James, if you're still watching, you're a Mississippi guy. What are your thoughts of Ole Miss's co-OC, Baker? What's his full name, guys?
John David Baker.
James, if you're still watching, any thoughts on him being a Mississippi guy? You may be more familiar with him than most. So we'll give James a second to reply, and then we'll get out of here.
Yeah, while we're waiting on James to chime in, a little bit more about John David Baker, who is the assistant coach. And your co-offensive coordinator and tight ends coach, rather, at Ole Miss in his third season there in Oxford. He played quarterback for Abilene Christian, and is a Texas native. And then you had him spend 2014 and 15 at his alma mater, Abilene Christian, as a graduate assistant working with the quarterbacks, 2016 to 2018, quality control on the offensive side for North Texas. 2019, offensive quality control. I guess it was on Helton's staff. That would have been at USC. In 2020, he was a tight ends coach for USC. 2021, passing game coordinator, tight ends for Ole Miss. And then the last 2 years, co-OC and tight ends. So,
pretty good resume. Obviously, young coach, up and coming. Could be a great hire. That he's very intriguing. I might would favor him over Morris if we were in a situation where Mike just had an OC hired away and we were coming off of an 8-win season. But in the situation we are in, I'd probably go with Morris. But I could get behind either one of those two hires.
Right. Like if Donnie had retired after the bowl game last year.
Correct. Yes. But guys, Matt, are you ready to wrap it up?
Yeah. Matt, you have anything before we get out of here?
No, man. Just looking forward to seeing what happens tomorrow. And, you know, I think that's about it for me. Happy to get a basketball win.
And James did chime in about Baker saying that he's a good coach, as we've stated, not the primary play caller there at Ole Miss. The only thing I'd worry about with him is that I think Lane has his hands on that offense more than your average head coach. And that said, he may want to step out and do something on his own.
Well, if he was the primary play caller at Ole Miss, if he was the primary play caller at Ole Miss coming off of a 10-win season, he wouldn't be the candidate for an OC at East Carolina.
Of course. You have Charlie Weiss Jr.
Yeah.
$1.5 million, and Baker is making $500K. So that's what I would say. You know, it'll be interesting. Obviously, it's the opportunity. It'll be interesting to see what we pay him if he is the choice.
Probably $600K.
I would say is a minimal increase, but the opportunity to be an OC and call the plays.
This is pure speculation on my part, but if I was John Gilbert, I'd be having a conversation with Mike Houston about look, if we need to get a good OC in here, we're gonna have to pay him. You might have to take $100,000, $200,000 pay cut. I don't know if that's been discussed, but if I was the AD, it sure would be.
No doubt. And on that note, we'll wrap it up and get out of here. Again, you've been watching Pirate Basketball Overtime. East Carolina victorious over the UNC Wilmington Seahawks. Best win of the season, best atmosphere of the season at Minji's. Pirates 74, Seahawks 66. And again, we've been talking Pirate Basketball here on Pirate Basketball Overtime on the Sports Objective. Have a great one, everyone. And as always, go Pirates.